We'll convene the Committee on Rules and Elections, and we're going to open the public hearing on House Bills 3505 and 3506. We have a conference call for some witnesses who are now in the extension office in Ontario. May not be.
Now we can dial. Go ahead.
Extension office.
Good morning.
Hi.
This is Senate Committee and
the conference call.
Conference call.
Let me pass the over.
Thank you. 3505 and 3506.
I have a whole amount of carry.
Hello?
Hello there.
What in the...
Can you hear us okay?
Are you all right? Can you identify yourselves for the record?
We have Capital Group.
I'm Commissioner. Keith Bunker, President of Mayor County Farm Bureau. Ben Jepson, Mayor County Extension Office. That's the group this morning.
Thank you very much. We were able to pick up the last name much more clearly than the others. If you could get closer to the microphone or the speaker, it would be useful. We have opened a public hearing on House Bills 3505 and 3506, and Representative Butler is at the witness table here and going to tell us about those bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's my great privilege, and it is indeed an honor to come before you today representing the agricultural interests of the state of Oregon. Permission to use a visual aid, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, identify yourself for the record.
I beg your pardon. I have a habit of doing that. Nobody wants to know who I am back home.
I recognize
it. And over here I try and use a mustache to disguise myself. Representative Tom Butler from House District 6, Mr. Chair. Thank you very kindly.
Begging your pardon.
I just wanted to demonstrate just briefly a picture of a map. This was relative to House Bill 3506 of Mountaineer County and the agriculture portion of Mountaineer County, which vests in the eastern probably one-tenth of the county, certainly one-third to one-fourth of the county, and the high volume of high-value produce and crops, particularly the onions. This is where the vast majority of the sweet Spanish onions in the United States are grown, and this valley on the Idaho and the Oregon side produces 40% of the onion crop of the United States. So this onion crop is very, very important. In addition, other field crops such as potatoes and sugar beets and other kinds of field crops are grown mixed with corn and other grain crops for rotation.
Mr. Chair. Were those Spanish onions being known as Walla Walla Sweet, or is that different?
The Walla Walla Sweet is a different onion, has a shorter lifespan than the Sweet Spanish, and Senator Bryan, the next time we get Mr. Skeen here in the Capitol, he's promised at Grace Cronican's request, Director Cronican said, she said, "You're the onion man. What are you doing here without onions in hand?" So these are the Sweet Spanish, which are a different variety. They're a much longer keeper than the Walla Walla, and it's a different variety, but we're very, very proud of them in this particular valley. So,
I would like them also.
Okay, yes, absolutely, and we'll see that you get some, Senator Bryan.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The majority of the valley is divided by the Snake River. However, floods from ancient times after the territory was formed left a large portion, as you can see down below the Nissa area where the Snake River intersects and starts to become the boundary. A large portion was just divided just by a straight line, and the Snake River winds itself and mingles back and forth between the Idaho and the Oregon border, as I have depicted on the map in part. And so what virtually happens is that relative to transportation between Idaho and Oregon in those portions are that fields can be, one side of the field can be on the Idaho side and another side can be on an Oregon side. And coming out of a field with a field-loaded farm truck, the weight can be legal in Idaho, which has a 3,780-pound higher truck limit for agriculture trucks than does Oregon, and it can be legal on as it drives into the Idaho side, but illegal on the Oregon side of the road. The other issue that we have is that Oregon has been very proactive in trying to, because we have the railroad tracks in Nissa and in Ontario, we have been very proactive in trying to get the opportunity to put in as many of the warehouses as we possibly could, onion shipping and produce houses, that actually ship these onions, not just all over the United States, but literally all over the world. Containers are loaded at Ontario and shipped out. The difficulty is that with the Idaho limits being 3,780 pounds greater, Idaho trucks legally loaded in the field and legally running across Idaho scales can't technically come into Oregon with their loads. The other issue is that in Oregon, when you're loading onions, we have information relative to onions and potatoes and sugar beets as well, that just a few seconds longer on the chain, loading to the end of the row of as much as just a few seconds can overload about 300 to 900 pounds in just a couple of seconds. And that weight tolerance is what we're concerned about, allowing the growers for field-loaded agriculture products in Niger County to have the same opportunity to move their products onto the Idaho side for those warehouses which are presently located in, for instance, Parma and Weezer, which are closer for some of our farm growers across Oregon highways, or for the Idaho producers in the Treasure Valley to be able to bring those field-loaded products into the warehouses so that they can be shipped either by rail or by truck out of those warehouses after sorting. And so relative to 3506, we are requesting that Niger County have an opportunity to be recognized for these higher field-loaded weights. In speaking with the management of the City of Ontario and their public works folks, we asked if this would make a great deal of difference. We have Mr. Steve Johnson here today from the ODOT, but the expression from the folks at the Ontario and the Ontario city management was, what difference will this make to our highways? And they said, well, we've been trying to encourage the truck weights from Idaho to come in so that they would do business so that we could grow more produce in Oregon along our trackage, and so... They indicated that our roads are already built with the capacity to handle these Idaho truck weights. Again, this is for field-loaded agriculture produce, and it's a very specific time of the year. It's a very specific types of commodities, of farm commodities, and they're loaded basically without the benefit of having an opportunity to have run across any scales out in the farm field. We had testimony from one of the participants who's there at the extension office this morning, agronomist Jim Jensen. Mr. Jensen, what's your first name? I beg your pardon. Anyway, the extension agent, the county extension agent, Mr. Jensen, the county extension agent's office explained and gave testimony to us that the specific gravity of potatoes is such, and the same could be true with onions in part and largely the same with sugar beets, but the specific gravity, the same number of potatoes, the identical same size, you can look at the load the same number, same size of potatoes, and the weight could be different by literally hundreds and hundreds of pounds. And there's no way of actually eyeballing with the heavy weights of trucks that a truck is even sometimes loaded, because you can't see any of the load in the back of the truck and some larger of the fuel loaded trucks. So what we've done is N3506, with the amendment that we're asking today, the amendment, we had basically replicated some of the information from the Idaho Department of Transportation code, and we had replicated that relative to these fuel trucks, and so that Idaho will recognize our farm trucks coming into Idaho, and Oregon can have the benefit of the deliveries back into Oregon of the Idaho fuel-loaded farm trucks, that this weight limit be allowed for the agronomists and agriculturists in Niagara County, and it would provide for this additional load limit so that our economies can be compatible. In large measure, it becomes an economic development bill as well, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Skeen, who is on the other end of the phone there, is the president, I believe, of the Idaho Oregon Onion Producers, and he may offer testimony as well relative to the issues that are involved here.
Thank you very much. Questions of the committee members?
So, Idaho, as Mr. Chair, Idaho actually had more weight than Oregon.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, that's exactly right. Idaho, for the identical truck, allows 3,780 pounds more on the absolutely everything identical with the
onions, potatoes, beef, stuff like
that. Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, yes, it does.
Is there somebody from Idaho listening in?
We have from ODOT, Steve Johnston from ODOT here, and he has coordinated this activity with the state of however, on the other end of the telephone line also is Paul Skeen, who is the president of the Idaho Oregon Onion Producers.
I'm here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything if there's somebody from Idaho out there. That's what I want to know. That's something I want to say. If somebody from Idaho, I don't want to say it, so I have nothing to say. I'll feel it more subtly in a different way when ODOT gets up here.
Rock into Idaho, but I'm not from Idaho.
You ever look at the Idaho roads?
Are you speaking to me?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. That's the only question I have, Mr. Chairman. This does relate, does it not, Mr. Chair? Excuse me, does Idaho have a diesel fuel tax or a weight mile tax?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, Idaho has had a weight mile tax up until just a few years ago, and they're in the process of switching to an actual diesel tax.
I see.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I want to take this opportunity to thank Representative Butler for sponsoring these two bills. They are at the request of the Oregon Farm Bureau, and a number of the people that are on the other end of the line here have helped put these together, obviously. Representative Butler indicated this is an economic development bill. At least 3506 certainly is, and we appreciate that. I thought perhaps Senator Courtney had a question. Maybe just an answer a little bit to Senator Courtney's question regarding the Idaho weights. Idaho higher weights were grandfathered in at the time that the United States adopted weight limits nationwide. and they were grandfathered in at higher weights than we are, and that's why the discrepancy. And what 3506 also provides is that these higher weights will not be traveled on interstate highways. We would have a problem if we were to do that. And so the bill provides that they will not be traveled on the interstate highways. And there's two of them in Malheur County. That's Interstate 84 and Highway 95. 95 is a non-entity in that it's farther down south in the county where this intensive farming does not occur. And so it's really not a problem at all. There are other roads, state roads, that they can travel to cross from Idaho to Oregon to get to the warehouses. And so it's not a problem not to travel on the interstate highway. So 3506, I think, as Representative Butler adequately explained, simply provides that when you are field loading your truck, that you can travel at these higher weights between Malheur County and Idaho. It does not affect any other county in Oregon. 3505, on the other hand, is a different bill, and it deals with somewhat similar problem in that it deals with weights. The issue there, again, is that you are field loading your truck, and you have no idea when you're loading that truck, whether you're 1,000 pounds under, right on, or 1,000 pounds over the legal weight limit. And so what this provides is that there will be a minimum penalty of at least $5 for being overweight, and that's current. And then for up to 3,000 pounds, the penalty would simply be cut in half. And then over 3,000 pounds, you go back to the regular penalty schedule. And the concept there is to simply take care of that situation, as Representative Butler said, when you're loading that truck, and you know, if you keep going for another 500 feet, you're going to be overloaded, but you don't know whether you are or you aren't, and so it simply takes care of that problem. It does not allow people to blatantly go overweight. Anybody that's going over 3,000 pounds overweight pretty clearly knows what they're doing, and we feel should be assessed the regular penalty. So I'll just conclude with that, ask the committee's favorable action on this bill. Thank you for hearing this bill, and we look forward to it moving on to the floor. Oh, excuse me, Representative Butler mentioning one thing. There is an amendment to 3506 that you need to be aware of. It's really just a technical thing on page 4 of the A and Gross bill. When the bill was printed, they missed between line 33 and 34 on page 4. There should be another weight limit in there, or another series of weights, and they forgot to put that in there, and so it got the next four lines off. And so what 3506 simply does is correct that weight table to what it's supposed to be. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you. Any comments from our witnesses in Ontario?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Dennis Bounds. I'm one of the partners in a large family farm here in Malheur County, WBH Farms, LLC. We're a family operation with father-in-law and about two sons and two son-in-laws. We raise potatoes, mint, onions, sugar beets, corn, and wheat. And 4 points I'd like to bring out on allowing us to haul the extra weight compared to Idaho is, number one, all tandem trucks or single-axle trucks in Malheur County, if they think they may have the tendency to haul this extra weight, would be paying higher licensing fees. So proportionately, every truck will pay higher licensing fees where every truck may not haul the extra weight, which in turn will generate more revenue for the county and the state without the need to enforce it through penalties or overweights, so there's no cost involved to generate that extra income. Number two is most of the growers in this area have went to heavier-duty diesel trucks and then single-axle rear ends or tandem axle rear ends, which are equipped with air brakes. We went to a heavier type bed which can haul all crops without having to change the beds on the truck. And due to this, the lightweight of the trucks has increased, but in turn, it allows us less net weight allowable to haul. But the reason for doing this is because of the safety of the trucks with the big heavy-duty air brakes like you see on the highway trucks and everything else. It makes a much safer truck to be going up and down the county roads with the traffic, and where we go from the country into town to deliver and back out, it increases the safety factor tremendously. Number three, Idaho pays quite less minimum wage to their help, and where we're competing for the same markets and the same produce sheds in this Treasure Valley area, where they're allowed to haul more weight, pay less wages, their cost of production is less than ours, and this would just be one step in helping us to come out on more of a level playing field to compete evener with them. Because we all love the state of Oregon, and we don't want to go across the river to farm. We want to stay right here in the Oregon side of the Treasure Valley. The last point I'd like to bring out, the extra 3,800 pounds we would be allowed on the tandem would mean, on an average, about 15% less total truckloads on the road during harvest time. On the particular farm I'm a partner in, we estimate we haul about 5,100 total loads a year during harvest time, and that's just our farm, so you can see the great savings on the roads and the traffic if the whole county's hauling 15% less loads at harvest time. You're talking, you know, thousands of less loads on the highway, which in turn is better for the wear and tear on the highway and the safety just for the general public of less loads and trucks and traffic on the road. I appreciate your time and hearing us, and I would hope you'd make a good, sound decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? I think you've made your case. We're going to proceed to a work session and hopefully move these bills on to a passage on the floor.
Are we going to hear some motor vehicle at O'Donnell and these bills?
Well, I expect we could do that.
They're in support of them. You're okay with these?
Yes, Senator?
Yes.
This is Lou Westheim, with County Commissioner in Dodger County, also farm public ground. Only one point I'd like to add to the one that Mr. Brown made earlier is that these loads are all hauled in the fall and the dry time of the year, and there's absolutely no frost, wet conditions or anything, and so it's just making not a problem with rain and frost for road teams in one thing or another, and it just makes a lot of difference too. So we'd appreciate your consideration on that point also.
Very good point. We're going to hear from ODOT here now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Johnston. I'm the manager of field services for ODOT. We were involved working with the industry in trying to craft the bill. Generally, ODOT is against any increase in weight. That'd be a true statement. The only place, though, in the state where this type of bill would work is in Malheur County, because of a very limited area with higher weight limits where you have Idaho in Oregon both growing the same crops, competing for the same business. In Klamath Falls, for instance, you have some of the similar situations, but the weight limits are identical, California's and Oregon's. The same thing is true on the Washington border. The amount of extra road wear, there's no doubt about it, there'll be some extra road wear, but it's such a limited use, and it's for such a short period of time. The general feeling of our engineers was that it's not that big of an issue as long as it's understood. We don't want this to be a statewide situation, that it only be for this very limited use.
That's true. So I want to give thank you, Mr. Shula. I want to give the record. You can answer like this. Washington is identical to us, and California is identical to us, because it seems to me that if the counties in Southern Oregon come in with logs or something, we can make the same argument in the state of California, or I don't know what you could do in Washington. I guess there's some stuff going on there. There's not going to be the same kind of situation where if you do it for Idaho, you are just doing it for Washington and for California to favor different economic interests as well. That's not going to be an issue.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney, the only place in the state this could happen is really where it is happening in Malheur County. The weights in Washington are identical. The weights in California are actually less. They only allow up to 80,000 pounds. Nobody else could make the argument that they're competing for the same crops. And while this says Malheur County, I guess if you really want to rewrite the thing, you could say this 10% of Malheur County. It's limited on roads to where the number of road miles you're talking about is very, very small.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a map of Oregon in front of me in terms of the eastern counties out there. And I got to wonder, you're saying Malheur County, but there's other eastern Oregon counties out there that are heavily involved in farming and things. Why are they going to get eventually want to get into this as well? I mean, is that the only county that borders to Idaho, or the only one that could be involved in the eastern Oregon counties where this kind of the crops are being grown, but they want to move them into Idaho? I mean, I'd like to know about that, in all due fairness to the other eastern Oregon counties that are out there that are also in the farm.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, and I appreciate your question. It is a very fair question. Because of the Snake River that leaves the Farewell Bend and then divides the two states, and there's no bridges that cross beyond that point. There are some dams in the Hell Canyon further down, but this is the only canyon. This is the only county in the state that transports.
What is that county above? In Pendleton, near
this would be Baker County up here.
All right.
And Baker County to the north. Again, the last of the crossings are on Highway 201 south of Weezer. So that's the last of the bridge crossings that I'm aware of, other than a train trestle that's further down the Hell's Canyon.
And so Malheur is the only other county on the Idaho border, right?
That's exactly right. Now there are others on the border. You can go. You can go Baker and Wallowa.
Yeah,
I believe Union.
Yeah.
But none of those have any economic. That's in the mountain ranges. There's no economic transport back and forth. There's no highways or that I'm aware of. There's no way to get across those canyons until you get up to Spokane, Washington. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just hope, because I believe it or not, as you can probably say, this Liberal Democrat panel has a lot of friends out there, believe it or not. And when I go out there after session to see them, I don't want them far in front of me and destroying me. Because if I took care of my year and I ignored Union and I ignored Baker and I ignored them, and they want to know what's going on. So I'm serious. I hope that we understand that you know, if you're going to do it for my year and you're going to the rest of those eastern counties, and I don't know about all these roads and ways to get across into Idaho. I'm just saying, I hope this thing has been well-researched.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney, I'd like to have Mr. Johnson speak to that, but I do, 3505 does address the 3,000-pound field-loaded agricultural products statewide, where up to 3,000 pounds of field-loaded would be subject to a minimum of $5 fine, but no more than one half of the total fine, and then it goes back to the regular fine schedule. Again, the issue involves the field-loaded agriculture, and probably there's no field-loaded farm produce that I'm aware of that's other than perhaps hay and maybe some grains that are grown in Baker County, Further north, Wallowa may grow some grass hay, but then when we get up to Umatilla and the Pendleton area, then they certainly have some crops up there, but the marketing situation is much, much different between the Idaho or between the Washington and Oregon borders up there. This is a situation where the river south of Nissa, the river is no longer the dividing point, and what happens are the fields are intermingled between the two, and we would like to be able to capture the produce operations in Nissa and Ontario along the railroad tracks as much as we can.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
This is Paul Skeen with the Planning Board Association. The area that Steve Johnson referred to, Niagara County is a large county, but we're only talking about actually only three accesses into Idaho, at Adrian, and then 12 miles further to the north in Nissa, and then another 12 miles, I guess there'd be four because there's one in Weezer too. So it's a small area. Once you get further out, you're talking about Hell Canyon and the farming community along all of those areas. There is no access to get over there anyhow. This is a very small area, even of Malheur County.
I understand that, but some of the members here don't.
Maybe I could get them to come over and go hunting over here, and I can explain to them where it's at and show them around and feed them some onions while they're here.
Yeah, but first somebody set a farm. And when I was in the county, they would load the trucks to come down to Malheur County to get to Idaho. They load the truck in one of these other counties. That's all. You can't deny that either, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Courtney, we thought about that as well because we wanted this, if it was to happen, to be very limited use. Under federal law, we cannot allow extra high weight from what's on the interstate highway system or on what they call a national defense highway. If somebody was coming from another county to go any distance, they would have to literally do it most likely on one of those highways. And the weights were not increased for those highways. So for all practical purposes, I think it would be almost impossible for anybody to go a long distance unless they want to take a whole bunch of back roads to take advantage of the weights. And we feel comfortable that it's limited pretty much within 30 miles from the border for the bulk of the use. And the other piece of it is that a lot of the roads are county roads. And not state highways, and the county has also signed off on it, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lou Wettstein, who has just testified on behalf of the farmers, is the county commissioner there.
Thank you very much. Other questions?
Not. We're going to close the public hearing, and we'll... Any problem with moving these bills?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3505 to the floor.
Open the work session on 3505, and Senator Bryant has moved Senate Bill 3505 to the floor to do pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Bryant?
Yes.
Yes. Under Steve's necessary majority, House Bill 3505 has moved the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
It's your former farmer, Mr. Chair. I suggest you carry this bill.
The chair will carry 3505. We will open a work session on 3506.
Chair, I move House Bill 3506 to the floor. Do you pass?
We need
to, first I'd move the -A 33 amendments.
Senator Bryant moves the -A3 amendments to House Bill 3506. Any discussion? Any objection? To order.
Chair, I'd move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bryant has moved House Bill 3506 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bryant.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 3506 moves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Chair will carry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Great panel. It's an honor to come and testify before you. I appreciate you. Yeah.
We thank you for your participation in Ontario, and we believe that you brought us some good legislation, and we'll take care of it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2635.
Representative Meyer, and yeah.
Oh, that's a few with us. John?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Roger Byer, State Representative, District 28. Thank you for hearing House Bill 2635. This bill is brought forward by myself at the request of the Oregon Christmas tree growers. We have had quite a history with this issue. Last session, a bill passed that was identical to the original bill introduced by me. The bill died in the conference committee because we had agreed to work with the Department of Transportation and the county to solve the problem without legislation. That did not happen, so we are back with the bill this session. You have in front of you an Indian growth bill now, but I wish to speak to the Dash 5 amendments, and hopefully you have them with you.
We have a Dash 5 and a Dash A6.
Okay, well, I'm here to speak about Dash A5.
All right.
This bill would allow truckers to make a single call and get all the oversized weight and length permits they need to travel both state and county roads. Under current system, they have to make a stop and get a state permit someplace. They then have to find out which county they may or may not be traveling in, and when they figure that out, then they have to find a place to go get the county permit. What this bill would do was allow them to make a call, and it would require the counties to work with the Department of Transportation to set up a system where, through a single vendor, all permits are required. That's pretty much the gist of the bill. The way the bill started out, I think everyone was opposed to it. We've been working together with the help of Mr. Miller and the Christmas tree growers, with the Department of Transportation, with the State Police, with the Oregon Truckers Association, with the counties, to come up with a compromise that I think just about everyone is happy with. I have been told, I don't know if they're trying to testify, but the State Police, the Department of Transportation, and the Oregon Truckers Association have all agreed that this is a good system if we pass this bill. Unfortunately, I don't think I can say that for the counties because I understand there's many fifth amendments. It was introduced at their request. I will let them speak to the Sixth Amendment because that's their amendment, and I'm here to request the A5. With me is John Foster. He's the Oregon Legislative Chairman of the Northwest Christmas Tree Association, and John Miller, who is a lobbyist for the Christmas Tree Growers. They may have additional testimony to offer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent the Oregon Christmas Tree Growers. As Representative Byer pointed out, this bill started out as a 75-foot exemption for hauling agricultural products, the exemption for getting a variance permit in different counties. Now, the problems that have arisen, several different problems, when we sat down and talked about this issue with the state and the counties, and it's more or less a service delivery problem. And in the Christmas tree industry in particular, there's about a 20-day window to get all the product, the agricultural product off the field and shipped to the market. So if there's any inefficiencies in the permitting system, it inhibits the ability for the farmer to get their product to the market. Then there's problems in the system. And what we've done, we started out with a 75-foot exemption in the House, as Representative Byer stated. What we moved to was a more or less a one-stop shop concept that we sat down in a large work group consisting of the counties, the state, state police, the Farm Bureau, and some of the nurserymen, the other agricultural commodities, to come up with a system that would be more efficient in transporting agricultural products to the market. Again, the Dash A5s and the Dash A6s are before you. The difference between, they've basically come a long way this session in agreement with all the interested parties. The only thing that we have not agreed upon is the fee increase. You can see on the Dash A5s, the Dash A6s, everything is the same. Again, the one-stop shop concept, would still give the counties the ability to regulate their roads. They would say which roads you can travel on at which times, the over-length requirements, the weight requirements for which would be traveled on those roads. However, it would create a system of distribution for the permits, and it would be the one-stop shop. So the trucker who in the past has been confused on which number to call, which county, which state, and have to get all the necessary, it could be up to 37 different jurisdictions, they would call the one number. It could be private industry under this bill. It could be the county under this bill that would administer the one-stop shop. They call that one number. They say they're traveling, traversing state roads, they're traveling through Marion County to go to a farm, they're traveling through Clackamas County. The necessary variance permit would cover those three jurisdictions. Now, the counties and would provide the information for the one stop, and again, this, the Oregon Department of Transportation has worked very hard on this with us in developing the language you see before us and is supportive of the language. Again, the difference, the dash sixes on the second page, lines 2 through 7, are the only difference between the dash fives and the dash sixes. Current law right now requires a flat $8 fee, or not to exceed $8 for a permit. And that is for state and for the each jurisdiction. So each county can assess a fee of up to $8. Under the one-stop shop, one person would be doing the work. And again, the counties would be providing the information. We understand that. They would be providing maps and attachments for the truckers. However, more of the work and the burden would be off of the counties to do a lot of that work because of the one-stop shop, the person that's going to be administering that. So the in their amendment, they have addressed the $8 fee plus an additional amount to be determined by the department by rule not to exceed another $8 for every jurisdiction. For example, if you get a state and you need to travel through Marion and Clackamas, the fee could be $8 plus the 8 and 8. Our amendment does not address that those additional fees because we don't feel it's necessary. Again, the original, why this is a problem and why this has come about is because we feel that the counties have been using this more or less as a tax rather than a fee to regulate their roads. And so that's why we feel that the current $8 fee is sufficient to handle the one-stop shop program. And we'll let the counties talk about that because that's again, the only difference between our amendments and their amendments. And actually, I will correct myself. There is another Section 3 of their amendments takes effect July 1, 2000. We put June 1, 2000. That's not a big deal for us. Counties did say that that's the start of their fiscal year. And so we have no objections in our dash A5 to say that it would be June 1 of 2000.
July 1.
July 1, I'm sorry.
Chair?
Yes.
Representative Beyer, do you oppose the dash 6 amendments?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bryant, yes, I could not agree with the dash A6 amendments, specifically because under current statute it says the counties may charge up to $8, but they shall not charge more than is required to cover costs. So I guess my feeling is that if they are not they no longer have to provide a service, which they do now to issue the permits, if they no longer have to provide that service, then the current law says they shall not charge more than they need to cover costs. So if they take the one $8 fee and we split it between the different jurisdictions, that should cover their costs.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, further questions?
Senator Beyer. Thank you, Sean. These are primarily for the street trucks that are oversized but not overweight, right?
Mr. Senator Beyer, our particular issue, our big problem was overlength. You're absolutely right. However, the Farm Bureau and others that deal with overweight, it's been an issue for them in the past, too. We've been, obviously, have taken the lead on this issue, but Farm Bureau believes that, and others, agricultural commodities, including the Oregon Trucking Association, who is here also in support of this concept, they deal with overweight. But you're absolutely right. Our issue is overlength.
Okay. And I would think I was under a misunderstanding. I thought this was just for the Christmas tree haulers. So this was any oversized or overweight truck?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, this would cover over length and overweight. Any variance permit would be under the one-stop shop system. And so when we put together this work group, we all felt that if we're going to create a system, a different way of doing business in the state of Oregon, it's more efficient not only for the farmer but for the trucker, that we should develop that system around all the requirements under the variance
permit for each trip or for season.
That's a good question, Mr. Chair, Senator Byer. This is for continual annual permits. So it would still give the ability for the county to issue the single trip permits. We focus only on annual or continuous trip permits, and that is on line 10 of the. Line 10 of the dash A5 talks about terms and conditions of continuous operation variance permit.
Can you give me an example other than the Christmas trees where this someone might have that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Byer. Dump trucks, many dump trucks now pull a trailer. They're over 60 feet in length. They need a variance permit. Any overlength truck traveling in the state, whether no matter what it's on. The original bill dealt only with agricultural products. But when we went away from that concept to a variance permit for all truckers, it was decided, well, why do it only for agricultural products? If we're going to make this more efficient for truckers to use, we want to do it for all truckers. Nursery growers is another area where you have large trucks.
Is the permit for a specific route, or is it sort of just a Big King's X you can drive anywhere in the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, under current law, any state highway can be traveled with a state permit. Under current law, the county has the authority to close certain roads, individual counties do, to overweight trucks. Any other roads, if they get the permit, are open. This would not change that. It would just expedite the permitting process.
I'm not sure you answered my question. If I'm running a gravel rig that's overweight, over length, and it's sort of a standard route, but if I want to vary that, once I get the permit, can I drive on any road?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, no. The counties have the authority to say which roads they will allow to be overweight or over length. This doesn't change that.
So if somebody applies for a permit, wherever that single point is, and the person is going to be driving in Marion and Polk counties, will whoever's doing that permitting have to check with those counties to determine whether that route would, whether there's some physical constraint of the route that would allow the truck to operate there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, under current law, the counties close roads, regulate roads. This doesn't change that. The counties what they would have to do is, I'm not sure how Marion County does it. Clackamas County, they give maps out with their permits so the truckers know which roads are open and which ones are not open or the restrictions on different roads. I assume Marion County does something similar. I assume Yamhill County does something similar.
So your vision would be that the 36 counties, if ODOT was doing it, the 36 counties would just transmit that information once?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, that's correct.
Other questions?
I'm John Foster, and I'm co-chair of the Christmas Tree Growers Association, and I don't have anything else to add there. I thought Representative Byer and Mr. Miller did a good job of explaining our situation.
Thank you very much. Any further questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I am here for another bill when you get there.
Thank you.
We have Bill Inhofe and Roy Burns.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties.
With me today at the table is Roy Burns, Intergovernmental Coordinator for Lane County, and also in the audience here to respond to any technical questions that you might have are Cynthia Schmidt, who is the Transportation Engineer for Marion County, Rob Wilbanks, the Special Services Operation Manager for Douglas County, and Rob Paul, who's the Douglas County Engineer. As the previous witnesses indicated, Mr. Chair, we are bringing to you the Dash 6 amendments, and I think the differences have been described. They involve the ability for the rule developed by ODOT to include a permit for each jurisdiction involved in the permit that is issued. Let me give you a little bit of background on this issue. What we are doing is actually building on an existing agreement that the counties have with ODOT. We have a program where ODOT issues single-trip permits and contacts the counties if the mover is moving through a county to determine the route over which that single trip can go. This bill would extend that to what is called continuous trip permits, or trip permits that would be valid for up to 1 year in length of time. As Mr. Miller indicated, we have worked with them since the bill came out, well, before the bill was heard in the House, but since the bill came out of the House and over here, we've worked, involved the Farm Bureau, ODOT, ourselves, and we've basically come to agreement on all of the issues except the fee issue. There is a cost even in this system, a coordinated system, and we're anxious to develop a one-stop permit system which would reduce the cost to the trucking industry in gaining these permits. Hopefully, we could set it up where they could make one stop rather than going to two jurisdictions or three jurisdictions to acquire permits. We still feel that there is a cost associated with issuing that permit. The statutes in 818-220 set forth some provisions, conditions that must be in those permits that are issued by whatever jurisdiction, basically for the protection of the roads and streets as well as the safety of the public. It's very important that the agency make a determination that the vehicles using these roads can actually stay on their side of the yellow line as they're traversing some of the more difficult county roads. So this was mentioned as the Dash 6 amendments as providing for a fee increase. What we're saying is, you know, not a fee increase. We're currently collecting fees for individual permits. So we're going to consolidate those into a single permit, but the cost associated with processing those permits remain. Though I do agree that there could be a cost reduction when you have one agency issuing a single permit rather than the individual's agencies issuing their own individual permits. The fee, as you see in on page 2, lines 2 through 7, would be the permit that would be issued would be valid for traveling in more than one road jurisdiction, and the Department of Transportation, by rule, would establish what these fees should be. And the fees are basically set to recover the cost of the agency providing the service. And as you probably know, in Chapter 291, state agencies are limited to what they can include in those fees. In 291.050, fee is defined, and it says it fee means the amount imposed and collected by a state agency to defray or recover the costs of administering the law involving the law involved in providing the service to the public and used by the state agency for carrying out or enforcing the law under its jurisdiction. So the fee has to relate to the service provided.
Currently, are you receiving $8 by you, I mean the county, for processing these fees?
Up to $8. It varies depending upon the county.
And how much of a workload reduction do you have by not preparing the permits?
That's a good question. I think you're still going to have the major cost in that fee processing, which is the permit clerk or the permit person that actually receives the information, the request on the permit, makes a determination as to whether the route requested can accommodate the load and can it accommodate it for a period of 1 year, and then responds to the ODOT with the authorization to issue the permit. The preparation of the route maps and transferring that information to ODOT to get that information onto the trucker. So,
but is those 50% reduction from what the current?
Well, those costs generally run between $4 and $6 just for the personnel costs.
But surely that person should, in most counties, would be doing other things too.
That's true. But what I'm looking at is the cost that has been identified, at least for us, Mr. Chair, as the ongoing cost. I have Mr. Burns here from Lane County could maybe be more specific in that, or one of our other county representatives could spell out for you the costs that they would see, how those would differ from today where they're issuing a permit themselves to one where they're issuing a coordinated permit with ODOT.
The initial $8 that would continue under this that goes to ODOT, does ODOT distribute any of that money to the counties, or does ODOT just keep it?
ODOT would charge, or they would establish by rule what that fee would be. The law would say up to $8, may not be $8. They would keep that to cover their costs.
And then we were asking rule up to their $8. If they only charge $6, could they charge $8 and allow the counties to keep $2?
I presume that under the rules they could do that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Byer.
Thank you. Bill, one of the things I'm wondering here, I'm trying to distinguish between the continuous yearly permit and what was a single trip permit before. If I'm understanding this correctly, well, a single permit's real clear. You know, if I'm taking a load of whatever, so you know, if I'm driving a crane from Portland to Lebanon for a project, I apply to ODOT and say, this is where I'm going to drive. Can I do that and pay my $8 for a gas gauge or whatever? And they say, yeah, we've checked all the bridge heights and the weight limits, and you can do that. Under a continuous permit, do they have to specify the route? As I'm reading this, it says one permit valid for every authority in any jurisdiction a person would travel. And I guess my question is, if I'm reading that correctly, if I'm running a crane company where I used to say, I'm going to take this trip, now I'd be smart to just say, I want to buy a continuous permit and be able to drive any place I want.
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, yes, basically they would prescribe the route that you would follow, but that would be good for up to a year unless the county or ODOT notified you that there were conditions that changed that would have to further qualify that permit.
Mr. Griffin, it's all that. I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't even say you have to specify a route, unless I'm missing it. It says, and I'm reading Section 2, the system shall allow a person to obtain one permit that is valid for every road authority in whose jurisdiction the person will travel. It doesn't say anywhere that you have to specify a particular route. Hopefully I'm misreading it.
Well, under the provisions of 818-220, it sets out the conditions that are set forth in that permit, and that authorization, number 1 says that the agency may grant a permit that is valid for a single trip, a number of trips, or continuous operations. As I testified, we've dealt with the single trip permit, as you have described.
So you have to, for each permit, you have to specify a specific route?
This would, if the road configuration was such that it couldn't operate on all of the county roads, which are very likely, then they would need to designate the route that load should take. If it is such a length or a width where it would have problems with structures over the road, then that information would have to be determined in advance, and the load would have to be routed in a different through a different series of roads to accommodate the size of that particular load.
Since you come on up,
Mr. Chair, Senator Byers, this is Cynthia Smith, who is the transportation engineer from Marion County.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you introduce yourself and then you can respond to you.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Schmidt. I'm a transportation engineer with Marion County, and I've been administering the Marion County Transportation Permit Program for about 11 years. And in answer to the question that you raised as far as the length or duration of the permit and the route that they can travel on, essentially we have several options, but the great majority of the permits that are issued are annual permits, and they allow operation within the entire jurisdiction with the restrictions on routes imposed by the attachment. So essentially, through the MAP process, we designate certain routes that can allow certain configurations up to certain lengths and dimensions, and then there are other routes where we've got them coded in a color such that only rigs of a certain size can go there because we know we have curve limitations and that kind of thing. So the MAP attachments and the other attachments with various traffic conditions that might be imposed in order to travel on certain routes are compiled and attached to each permit.
And that's current practice?
Yes.
And you're sure that this law doesn't change that?
My understanding of it is that the difficult part is that there are not a lot of details worked out at this point yet, so we're doing a lot of assuming as to how it's going to work in practice, but it does, to me, it does affect continuous trip permits. It does affect not just route-specific permits. Does that answer your question?
You threw me off with the last one. It doesn't affect route-specific permits?
No.
Wouldn't these still be routes? Your intent would be that they would be route-specific, they'd just be good for a year.
Actually, my understanding and my interpretation of what is written is that it would affect stuff that covers countywide travel. We have current arrangements with ODOT to deal with single trip permits, but our continuous operation permits, a lot of those are on an annual basis typically or a month.
But they're along with specific routes.
Right.
No, they are not.
But you determine at the county level what routes are available.
We do via the attachments, yes.
Yep.
Yes.
I think that's the question that
our
witness is in. You still have the control on saying where you can drive.
Mr. Chair, I would add, however, that in lines 18 through 21, it would say that a road authority, which would mean a county other than the department, may not issue continuous operation variance permits unless it is a party to the agreement. So there is a limitation on what we can do today by this bill, but we have agreed to that because we have felt that it is a worthwhile goal to establish a one-stop permit system, hopefully reducing the cost to the agricultural community and the trucking industry, but at the same time protecting the interests of the traveling public. So there's still, I think, costs associated with it. I don't think they're going to be onerous costs. I think the state statutes clearly limit ODOT in what they could incorporate by rule in the system that they're directed under this bill to establish. I think they're limited on what could be charged. If there is, and I think there probably is, a reduction in cost if you've got multiple jurisdictions involved,
But our bill or our amendment would give ODOT the ability to look at those additional costs and give consideration to those in the final rule adoption.
Other questions, Bert?
Yeah. Chair Bryant, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Roy Burns, intergovernmental coordinator for Lane County Public Works. I did check with our permit clerk, permit administration, the current cost for permit issuance range, but do exceed the current $8. We believe there will be some savings. We are in support of going to an integrated system. We think it's in the best interest of the motoring public. We would, however, like to have the ability to at least cover the cost. We do not know what cost savings we may realize. That's why we support the Dash 6 amendments that would allow us to at least review that and coordinate with ODOT to try and establish reasonable fees to cover our costs.
Do you have an estimation on what savings would be from your workload? And by, you don't have to give me a dollar amount, but just a percentage as you use the workload.
Chair Bryant, it's extremely difficult to say it without analysis. I assume there will be some reductions because we'll have the centralized information collection. Currently, our clerk is expected to gather the information from the permit applicant, integrate it into the form, and then to coordinate to make sure the routing is acceptable with the individuals that administer our roads and bridges, to make sure the routing is acceptable and the configuration will not create safety or road damage. But how much savings, I couldn't give you a percentage estimate on that. The reason the language in the bill is written the way it is it would give us an opportunity to assess what those costs should be and then to establish them through rulemaking.
Okay. Head of Art.
I guess the issue, you know, I believe the sponsors of the amendment or the bill believe that it would be possible for a person setting a centralized point, probably in ODOT, to look at maps that the county should provide, and if an applicant came in and said, I want to operate this oversized truck that's 90 feet long and it weighs this much, be able to sit down and look at the maps and say, okay, they want to go this route, and say, yep, looks like they can do that. Without having to call anybody in the county, they could just do it off the map, and that would simplify the cost. What I hear you saying is that if they're using county roads, that they may not be, that it takes somebody who's in the county who knows that to be able to take a look at the situation and say, oh, you couldn't make that turn there, or that bridge won't hold that load.
Mr. Chair, as well as all I are. Yes, that's accurate. I think the concern is that this is going to apply up to 1 year, and conditions can change significantly in that period of time, and conditions that may not necessarily be reflected on that map. So I think, I don't know, you may want to ask ODOT, but I would think for their protection and the protection of the mover and the public, that they would need to check with the county to make certain that there isn't something that would jeopardize on one of those roads that they could actually travel that would create a problem for either the trucking industry or for the public. Because it's simpler with the single trip permit, because you basically define one trip, where it goes, and when. But when you get into the continuous operation, and it can be in effect for up to a year, conditions can change dramatically, and so there needs to be that coordination with the public agency.
I guess the real question, though, is it's still a matter of this, is it technically possible for a person to set in one office and be able to look at a series of maps and define whether a route was acceptable in all 36 counties? Because that's really the issue, and will be acceptable all the time without consulting with anybody locally. My sense is if they have to pick up the phone and just call somebody and Clackamas County and say, I've got an application here that's going to do this. And if they talk about it for 10 minutes, they probably ran up $2 or $3 in cost to the county side, in fairness.
Senator Chair, Senator Beyer, if I might answer that, it currently and in the future, it is not possible to provide the information that an individual in one location without contact can make that decision. For example, when you start getting into weight issues, which is very common when we get into the overlength issues, we actually have several load-limited bridges within all of our counties, and we actually have a bridge program that we do an engineering analysis to see whether a particular configuration can cross that bridge. So that engineering time and staff time is pretty much a given if the route that they want to choose has got any kind of weight limitations on it.
And you could do that kind of analysis for $8.
Chair Bryant, Senator Beyer, answers no.
Chair, Senator Bryant, I think the legislature in its wisdom has set the maximum at $8. I think in the future, both ODOT and ourselves are going to have to come back and address that, because I think costs, how long has that been $8? That's been many years, and I think costs are continuing to go up, as we all know, and sometime in the future that's going to have to be addressed, but that's not the issue here. And Senator Bryan, you may want to ask your question of ODOT, because they're going to be sitting in the captain's seat on this, and in the majority of the cases, issuing these permits to operate on their system as well as to operate on county road systems.
Well, we have someone from ODOT here, so why don't we ask that question? Thank you very much. I'd invite Greg pronounce that incorrectly, and also we'll call up our last witness, Tim Bernanke. Oh, and Dave Nelson. Why don't we begin, though, with Greg and have him explain the ODOT process.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Delfani. I'm the Deputy Director for the Motor Carrier Transportation Division of ODOT. I think you've got an idea of the journey this bill has undertaken during this legislative session. It began in its original form as a bill which simply sought to say that tractor-trailer combinations up to 75 feet in length may freely traverse the highways and byways of the state of Oregon as long as a certain set of combination characteristics were adhered to. And what was inserted in that original bill amounted to nothing more than the permit conditions which characterized the movement of a particular 53-foot trailer semi combination along the highway in 214. Our original argument was that permits are not issued as a revenue producing function. Permits are issued in order to state the particular conditions and circumstances under which the travel of a particular vehicle in a particular configuration could safely occur over a specific length of highway. And one size did not fit all. And in the testimony that the House Transportation Committee originally heard on this bill, it soon became the case that it really wasn't a question of access that was being debated about what size vehicles can safely operate on what specific highway. All the testimony from the industry seemed to center on the difficulty they were experiencing in dealing with the oftentimes many multiple road authorities that they had to deal with to get one, two, or three permits to conduct their business. So it really became a service delivery issue. So the House Transportation Committee asked us to go away as a group and see if we couldn't address that service delivery issue as opposed to access issue. It really isn't about highway geometrics now. It's about service delivery. How can the necessary permits most simply and easily and economically be placed in the hands of the motor carriers that require them? And so a work group which was inclusive of counties and ODOT staff interested members of the industry, both from growers and trucking associations, et cetera, came together and reviewed this matter, and I think in a very collegial kind of way, came up with the general guidelines that you see before you in both the Dash 5 and Dash 6 amendments. And in my view, the singular issue that remained, and the department does not have a position in this matter, under the current scenario, that permit purchaser is paying multiple $8 fees to multiple road jurisdictions. And the concept was expressed, if we are migrating to a one-stop shop kind of environment, and we're purchasing a singular permit in lieu of multiple permits, would it be reasonable to assess a single fee instead of a multiple fee? During the conversations that evolved, I think it became clear that there was an uncertainty. And this is a question that was just asked. What are the costs associated with issuing those permits? And from the department's perspective, I'd have to tell you that I cannot tell you what it costs to issue a continuous trip permit. I hope to soon be able to because I think, as you may be familiar, the department is developing a true product cost accounting capability. And when that is in place, I may be able to derive that kind of data. But today, I can only tell you that the $8 fee is set in statute. It's in Chapter 818, 270, and it is the road authority may assess the fee up to $8. So in terms of what's the actual cost, I don't know. At the Department of Transportation, we have a staff of folks that issue single-trip permits. What we have done is we've created a privatization opportunity for the issuance of continuous trip permits. We have entered into agreements with a couple of folks in the private sector that act as our agents, and they issue the continuous trip permits on our behalf. They distribute them. We issue them. We set the terms and conditions that affect the safe passage. And they produce the permits in accordance with our instructions.
Senator, are you all questions?
And just when you set the terms and conditions for safe passage, now for the single trip, do you have to consult with the counties along the way to determine whether it would be, or do you just do that off the maps in your central office?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, there are 34 counties that participate with the state in the issuance of these single-trip permits. Some of the counties have authorized us to issue permits in accordance with a one-time delivered set of instructions, and then it's incumbent upon them to advise us if those circumstances change. Other counties have asked that we make a phone call and confer with them each and every time we issue a permit on their behalf. We will generally cooperate and issue a county on a permit and issue a permit on a county's behalf when the intended travel and the single trip permit will include both state and county highways.
In your professional opinion, can you use just a set of maps without conferring with the county to determine whether a road truck configuration is going to be able to go across the bridges and around the turns safely?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, it's my belief, I sat in these discussions that led up to this, and it's my belief that the premise is sound. There will be an initial conveyance of information, pertinent information, from the county to the state. And this is all part of the process that Section 2 says the department, in consultation with the road authorities, shall develop and implement the system. So it's a work not yet done.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get at, I don't think there's any question, at least I don't detect in the committee, that it makes sense to have a single source. The dispute is over is there any work, it's not should they get fees, is there any work that counties are going to have to do this? Because as someone has correctly portrayed, fees are not revenue sources. Fees should only be for the cost of doing the work. And what I'm trying to figure out is in the opinion of the professionals that are going to have to make these judgments about whether a certain configuration can go down the road and cross the bridge, whether you can do that from a set of maps or whether you're going to have to confer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, it is my professional opinion that it would constitute a workable scenario if we had an original transference of data and then the counties assumed responsibility for making the department aware if there was a substantive change in circumstance. In other words, we can work with a set of data provided by the county. And in my view, this is not yet accomplished, but in my view, the system would provide for making the counties responsible for telling us if there's a significant change in the county infrastructure. Has the bridge rating been reduced? Has an overlay reduced the overall height clearance in an underpass? Things of that ilk. We would assume a constant state of information until we were made aware that there'd been a change. So I see it as a one-time conveyance of data. It would involve maps. It would involve some other kind of detailed material that we would use to assemble the permits, and we assume it's valid until we were told otherwise.
So they're going to have to be, the counties are going to have to be at least vigilant to, I guess, at least annually review their data and make sure there hasn't been a change and convey that updated information to you at least annually.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, I would anticipate that it's more frequently than annually, but at the minimum annually. I would think it would concur with their construction. As they make significant changes to their infrastructure, they would need to advise us if that change has impacted in any way the condition permit, which apply as often as that occurs.
It sounds to me like they have some level of workload on an annual basis. Okay.
So I simply conclude by saying I have found the discussions to be collegial. I understand the issue that remains to be discussed on the basis of the fees, and the department has respectfully has no position on that. It does not impact us.
I guess I should ask one question was raised earlier by Senator Bryant, whether ODOT would share part of that $8 fee with the counties to cover their costs.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, Oregon Revised Statutes 818-270 specifically says that the Road Authority, ODOT, can collect a fee up to, but not to exceed, $8. And it also provides that for any party that participates as an agent or in distributing the permit as an agent for ODOT can receive a fee of $5.
So how does that relate to the counties?
If the county is acting as an agent for ODOT in the distribution of the fee, in the distribution of the permit, they would be the recipient of the $5 fee stipulated in 818-270.
It seems like it's the other way around, that ODOT would be the agents of the county in issuing the fee, because what we're talking about is moving to a centralized issuance. As you described for the single source, you're issuing on behalf of the counties.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, I think the intent of the amendment before you is that ODOT, the Department of Transportation, takes the posture of the issuer of the permit and may utilize counties to distribute them. And they, in distributing them, will act as an agent for ODOT.
So be the department's intent then to give the counties $5 for each permit issued in their county?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, it's actually a revenue reduction. We allow the agents, it's not a cost. We're not paying $5 out to these agents that issue the permits. The agents are collecting the fee, retaining $5, and reverting the balance to ODOT. The statute says that the Road Authority, ODOT, can collect any fee of its choosing up to, but not to exceed, $8. So it's a revenue reduction from our perspective. And the agent is performing the work of issuing the permit.
I'm confused. I thought the whole point was to have one office that the trucking companies could come to and get their permit. So how would the county be involved in that then?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, I guess the difference is the distinction between the word issue and distribute. If we enter into an arrangement and say, for instance, we utilize Marion County to be distributing these permits as an agent for ODOT, we'll have the statutory authority for the issuance of the permit. We'll elect to use the county to distribute them, and acting in that behalf, they will use the centralized data that we have accumulated for all the counties. They will be issuing permits, which we have created and we have established, and they become more or less an inventory of permits, which they're choosing from. They will receive $5 as an agent for the department.
But how does this reflect? If somebody from Klamath Falls called up and needed to get a permit for gravel operations, and they faxed the information into, well, Marion County under your scenario, and Marion County goes through all the work, looks at Klamath County's maps and says, yeah, I think you can do that route, issues a continuous permit. How does Klamath County get any money for the work that they did up front?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, that's the issue before you. In the Dash 5, they don't. In the Dash 6, they would, in an amount to be determined by rule. That's the argument before you.
Okay, so what you're saying then is that ODOT does not have authority to, under that scenario, give any reimbursement of the fee or a portion of the fee to Klamath County?
In the scenario you described, no, there's one permit, there's one fee, it's issued once, there's no additional division of fee. The Dash 6 would provide for additional fees to be shared.
Okay. Thank you. That's just good.
Other, Dave Nelson? No, not here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tim Bernasek of the Oregon Farm Bureau. Just wanted to conclude on some remarks on the testimony here. Farm Bureau has been involved in the negotiations that have taken place, and it's been hashed over a couple times already this morning, so I won't bore you with those details again. But we'd just like to reiterate that we do feel very strongly that this is a bigger issue than just the Christmas tree growers. And although they're a constituency of our group, there are other folks and nursery people and ranchers in eastern and southern Oregon that we also think would benefit from this process. I would like to very quickly touch on this fee versus tax issue that I think Representative Beyer did a good job of presenting. I think that's really the nub of the discussion this morning. And I guess the question is whether these permits should be viewed as a revenue-producing tool. And I need to back up and say my understanding of this agreement is somewhat contrary to what Mr. Delpani just presented, in that there is this $8 fee. And my understanding all along is that fee could be shared with the counties and ODOT and everybody else in coming together and sharing the work that comes up with issuing this permit, and that there was a one-stop-shop program that would be administered by ODOT, and whether a trucker notified a county to get their permit, whether they notified ODOT, or even a private vendor. I know in traveling back and forth between Idaho and Oregon, there's a truck stop in Farewell Bend that maybe truckers are familiar with. Maybe that's their person they contact to get this permit, but it would be administered by ODOT. And I guess the question then is, where does this $8 fee in the Dash 5 amendments, how does that cost get allocated? And I think, Senator Beyer, you're absolutely correct. If there's work and if the counties and shows their costs that go into issuing this permit, that this is not a revenue-producing tool, then certainly it makes sense that they ought to have part of that fee to cover those costs. And my understanding, again, is that under the Dash 5 amendments, they would be able to access some of that $8. And maybe Mr. Miller or some of the other folks could come back up and speak to that, or Representative Beyer. And I also would like to note that under the Dash 5 amendments, we think they're workable because by the time that this whole process is implemented, it's June or July of 2000 before this program will be implemented, and the next legislative session, again, would be 6 months after that time. And if through the negotiations, the ODOT or the counties were to figure there was some sort of problem in recouping their costs in this program, it would seem to me within that six-month period they could come back and figure out exactly what their needs are. Up to this point, I think the frustration that I've had with Farm Bureau is in when we start talking about these costs, it's kind of this nebulous, well, there are these costs, and nobody really seems to know what those are. And I think that under the Dash 5 amendments, they would provide some incentive for folks to determine exactly what those costs are and come back. And if there is a legitimate issue that needs to be addressed, it ought to be addressed in the next legislative session. So those would be my comments, unless there were any other questions.
My sense is when it started out as the Christmas tree bill. Not to use that term wrong. No, in honesty, it started out with that particular industry's interest and need, and that makes a lot of sense to me. In fact, the whole process makes a lot of sense to me. And you're probably looking at, I can just see, you know, someone trying to go up to San Diego to try to get the Christmas tree farms up there, or Silverton or something like that. You're talking one county. But when I think you're writing that, one of the issues that you really throw into there, and I was thinking of something entirely different when you started doing this, saying, okay, I can see people who are driving the heavy cranes around, or who are moving mobile homes, or who are doing some of the concrete companies that make the long beams and things. This would be a great service for them to be able to do that. But that gets much more complicated when you add all that in, and you may have more counties. And trying to deal with all that, I think, is a little more complex. I don't think there's any issue with that. I think there is an issue of cost. And I think it's legitimate. There are some legitimate costs that are out there, and I think the amount of money you're talking about in either one of these amendments for a one-time permit is fairly insignificant. It's more of a convenience for the industry to not have to chase around. You spend more money running around to two or three counties trying to get permits than being able just to fax something into one source and get the permit, whether that's a private truck stop that's contracted with ODOT or somebody else. So there are major advantages, and I think we just have to be fair and recognize the costs that are legitimately out there. Not a lot of money that we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, I think you're absolutely correct. And I think that's been the frustration, though, is to trying to find what those costs are. Oftentimes the industry is told that, well, all these programs are going to add costs, and so we're going to increase the fees. And I think the concern that I have and Mr. Miller and some of the other folks is that, well, we're fine with a fee increase if there's a legitimate basis for that, but just to say what we all think is an efficiency, a saving, cost savings device for everybody, let's have some understanding of where those costs are. And I think that's what is going into the spirit behind the Dash 5 amendments. But you're absolutely correct. Where the costs are there, I think they need to be reflected in the counties, and ODOT and everybody else should be compensated for what they really are putting into this program.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nelson, you wish to testify on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking you were on a different.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Is anyone else desiring to testify on the bill? We have not a quorum here at the moment. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2635. And where do we go next? Okay. How do we notify them? Open the public hearing on House Bill 3455.
On another bill. Let me just talk to that one a little later.
Yeah, sure. 3461?
Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on 3455 and open the public hearing on House Bill 3461. Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I hope this one will be quicker.
All right, I'd like that.
Yeah. I'm Roger Byer, State Representative, District 28. Before you have A. and Groh's version of House Bill 3461. This bill would allow trucks hauling certain crops or commodities of those crops, specifically grass seed, straw, grass hay, cereal grain, straw. I think those are all of them. Oh, and mint, and bagged mint leaves. It would allow truck hauling these commodities to be higher and wider They would have to get route-specific permits. They're issued on an annual basis, and they would not be allowed on the interstate. A very simple issue that the issue is before you is the fact that when you have grass seed straw, which is the original part of the bill, or grass seed bags, you load them on a truck, and you really can't control what those bags are going to do once they're loaded and tied down. The seed in these bags starts to shift. And as you travel down the road, they seem to get wider and wider and wider. And you may have started at 8'6", which is currently the legal limit now, by the time you get to where you're going, they may be 9 or 9 feet 2 inches wide because the grass has settled in the bags and just continued to get wider. This would require them to be route-specific, and so they're not anywhere in the county, not anywhere in the state, no interstate, no overweight, weight, no overlength, no overwidth, or no overweight. They would also allow for straw to be actually a little higher too, 14 feet currently. It would allow to go to 14.6, currently 14.4. And it's for the same reason is that you put straw in a bale and the bale grows a little bit after it's baled. It's designed to be a 32-inch bale, but once it comes out of the bale, it kind of fluffs back up a little bit, and then it's now a 36-inch bale instead of a 34-inch bale. So it allows just a little bit extra. But once again, it's route-specific and time-specific and no interstate. So with me is Don Schellenberg from Oregon Farm Bureau. I'm Dave Nelson from the Oregon Seed Council to testify on behalf of the bill. Also.
Good bill. I finally found the right one, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Don Schellenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau. Yes, Mr. Chairman, good bill. Should pass.
All right. Yeah.
If we can find the
Brian.
Remember not
to call. And Mr. Chair, Senator Bryan is right outside if you care to move this or the last bill.
And the last bill.
Yeah, and the last bill.
Thank you very much. Counties and ODOT are okay with this, I assume?
Mr. Chair, ODOT is okay with it. I haven't heard from the county. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Don't have ODOT signed up to testify on this.
Mr. Johnson's in the room. He's the individual we've been working with. And
no problem.
Thank you. We'll be at ease a moment while we wait for.
There we go.
Close public hearing, open work session on House Bill 3461.
Mr. Chair, I would move 3461 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Byers moved 3461 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments, discussions? Clerk, call or roll.
Senator
Byers.
Aye.
Senator Bryan. Aye. Yes, sir. Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 3461 is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Mr. Chair, carry that one again.
Mr. Chair, if you wanted to do 2635 and do it with the A6 to make them fix it in conference, I'd be willing to move that.
Okay. Open the work session on House Bill 2635.
Move the dash 6 amendments.
Senator Byers moves the dash A6 amendments to House Bill 2635. Any opposition? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2635 as amended to the floor for due pass.
Senator Byers moves House Bill 2635 as amended to the floor for due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Could Senator Byers carry that? He seemed to ask the good questions in on his
yeah.
Better than anybody else.
Questions are the easy part. It's the answers that are tougher.
And I think you're correct. This one's going to go to conference committee.
Right. Right. But Senator Byers will carry him to close the work session. Now we are Representative Loken still has not made it.
And she just wanted by, and I've been reminded, Mr. Chair, that we're supposed to be in caucus.
caucus.
Lesbian caucus. Well, that complicates things.
Not to me.
Not to you.
You know, Representative Beyer could be here to take the testimony on the last bill.
You want to do that at the end of the morning?
Available. There are actually three more bills.
We just move them to the morning.
I think we'll press them over.
I presume it looks like the same old crowd. Is anybody here from out of town?
Very well.
Don't see anyone. Same old crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to close the hearing and close the Committee on Rules and Elections.